all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the state of Wiscommon Sense up here on the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's a beautiful day up north. We hope you're enjoying the day wherever you are on this Thursday, July 20th. Live today, not so much tomorrow. We'll have a best of show on Friday as I get started with a little family week time with kids and grandkids. 62 degrees up here on Lake Wissota right now for folks listening on our home base, 93.5 The Tap. So here's what's on tap this morning all around Wisconsin. First, we ask in a rather forthright manner, honestly, who's against cancer screenings? Well, it appears right-wing judges and justices who are not resting in their efforts to undo progress that's been made for Americans in areas like healthcare. Wisconsin residents are in danger of losing a key benefit of the Affordable Care Act because a Texas judge has removed free access to essential preventative services like cancer screenings. Joe Zepecki helped the group Protect Our Care with an event on Wednesday, and he'll give us some background on that. In our second hour, Border Battle Part 2. You know, on Wednesday, we had some reporters from Iowa and Michigan outlining significant differences in what their legislatures focused on this spring. Well, in Hometown Health, in our next hour, Dr. Kristen Lyerly and a fellow obstetrician gynecologist from Minnesota look at the significant differences between what Republicans refused to do in Madison and everything Democrats accomplished in St. Paul on behalf of families and safety and public health. We'll also talk to Up North News reporter Selena Heller about Country Jam here in the Chippewa Valley and other big events coming up all around Wisconsin this weekend. And we are giving away Brewers tickets for Saturday evening's game at American Family Field. Tune in later this hour for our one question news quiz to be a winner. Along the way, if you'd like to join the show, the phone number is 844-967-2789. You can email us radio at upnorthnewswi.com. We'd love to have you along on this Thursday, where we bring in Aaron Zommers, who had a quiet evening and joins us from the new studios on State Street in Madison. How are you?
Doing well. Once again, it feels wrong to come in here in the morning and have it be so easy to get everything set up.
See that when you move into the new house and you don't have the old squeaks and problems with the old house, it feels pretty good.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, I mentioned that Aaron had a quiet night, comparatively speaking. Because last night we knew that thunderstorms were going to be rumbling through, and my wife works up in Rice Lake, about 45 minutes north of here, and I saw the radar bringing the thunderstorm closer and closer, and it wasn't just the deep reds that were in there, but like there were these fuzzy areas of white that were in there, and I thought, oh my goodness, what is this? And I'm bringing up now for Aaron on her video feed, the result of it of nothing but golf ball size hail and my wife's car, which my guess is the insurance company is going to total it out. The windshield is just a sea of cracks. And of course there's dents from the hail all over the car, and the car is 13 years old and it's a hard top convertible. So I'm not even sure if the convertible part of it, if the roof would even go down with that much hail damage on it. But Aaron, that was my night, was filling out all the insurance claims online.
Yeah, I much prefer mine, where I just kind of watch TV with my roommates.
That was my plan, and but unfortunately, now, and I'm thankful that Sherry wasn't driving in there at the time. In fact, I had to clarify it on social media when I posted something about showing the hail damage on the car. And I said, thankfully, my wife was inside at the time, and I wanted to come back and clarify. Let me clarify. I'm glad she was inside of her workplace, not inside the car. You know, that would be a whole different marital situation right there. But and look, it was far from just Sherry's car. There were all kinds of vehicles and all kinds of video and photos that we saw from the Rice Lake area, where, I mean, it wasn't just a little bit of golf ball hail. You can probably see underneath the car there. I mean, it looked like it snowed. And usually when you say that about hail, you're saying that about you know, maybe pea to marble size hail, but to have golf ball size hail and look like it snowed the hail was really something. The videos, it looked like people were under attack when you'd see the puddles and the other bodies of water as it's just getting pounded by these hailstorms. I hope too many people didn't get hit on the noggin with some of this stuff, because that would have left a mark, not just in a car, but in your skull. So hopefully everybody's okay. But that was not a great situation last night.
Yeah, I'm not envious.
No. And I hope everybody was safe. I know we have a wonderful insurance agent. She got to work with us right away. And so we're very thankful for that. But, you know, there's now going to be the right after the show, you know, trying to figure out where the car is going to go. Is the car, in fact, going to be drivable? Is it going to be fixable? Just a lot of errands that have to be run that you don't count on. It's kind of like all those insurance company commercials, not the ha ha funny ones, which there's way too many of them, but the serious ones that are like, look, here's why we're here. We're here in case things go really sideways for you. And in this case, again, it could have been a lot worse. Could have been our home, could have been an injury or something, but still, you know, when you come out of your workplace and you see that your ride home isn't going to be a ride home, it does throw your day a little off kilter. So we'll deal with that and hope for the best and hope for good weather throughout the rest of the weekend here. We will get a weatherology update for the full state, for the full weekend, coming up in our next hour. Coming up next, a Brewers update and some headlines. And then Joseph Pecky from Protect Our Care next. You're up north. Visits with us. You'd think, wait, why do we need to protect our care? Well, we're going to talk about a Texas judge in just a minute here. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
At 6:30 here. So sorry, we hit a wrong button. You're going to hear that Joe Specky interview coming up at 6:30, as we normally do on those Thursday mornings. We were hearing a little bit of Carlos Santana because today is his 76th birthday. So we'll hear a little bit more from him throughout the course of the morning here. Time now for our Brewers update. Hey, I should put myself on camera here. I got myself all befuddled over here. William Contreras, what a game last night. As I was watching it in between thunderstorms and insurance company calls, William Contreras hit a tie-breaking double in the seventh inning, and the Brewers beat the Phillies 5-3 last night. For the Brewers, it was their fifth win in six games. Contreras had three hits and two RBIs for the Central Division leaders. Blake Perkins drove in two runs. Milwaukee had 10 hits, and five of them were doubles. Always nice when the bats come back to life. And then Contreras really tied a bow on it with a key out in the ninth inning, throwing out a Phillies runner who was trying to steal second. Brewers starting pitcher Colin Ray allowed three runs, two of them earned, over five hits, over five innings. Corbin Burnes will be pitching this afternoon. And that'll wrap up a three-game series with the Phillies. Then they come home for a weekend series against the Atlanta Braves, and we will have tickets later this hour to Saturday evening's game with the Brewers versus the Braves. You can hear the Brewers in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3, 1100 AM, and WRCE News from the Center over in the Richland Center area. That's 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. We had heard the story about a U.S. soldier who had quite surprisingly bolted and fled across the border into North Korea. North Korea still has not responded to any U.S. attempts to discuss the soldier who ran across the heavily armed border. The soldier's family is from the Racine area, and the serviceman's prospects for a quick release are unclear, according to the Associated Press, with a time of high tensions and very inactive communications channels. The soldier's name is Private Travis King. He was supposed to be on his way to Fort Bliss, Texas, after finishing a prison sentence in South Korea for assault. But he instead, once he got to the airport for the flight home, he somehow managed to sneak in with a tour group. And the tour group was heading for the DMZ, the border between North and South Korea. And then at some point, he made a run for it and ran across the border, has not been seen since. And again, North Korea has not responded to any outward communication about possibly getting the soldier back or what they plan to do with him. So it's something that has his family in Racine obviously extremely concerned, and something that we'll continue to monitor here. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson is back in the news again. Yesterday it was for taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from his campaign donors, even though he said he wasn't expecting to be paid back for the personal funds that he loaned his own campaign. Yesterday we learned that Senator Johnson had done a wide-ranging interview with a YouTube influencer in which he embraced all manner of conspiracy theories, which I know is not new. Although he did get a little bit more specific in one particular conspiracy, saying that he believed it was certainly possible that government agencies were involved in the assassination of President Kennedy. He also called the death of sex offender Jeffrey Epstein fishy during this interview with a YouTuber, Tommy G, who asked the senator if it was possible that U.S. agencies were involved in JFK's assassination. "I think it's certainly possible, yeah," Johnson said. "The American public deserves the truth, and we haven't gotten it. There are so many unanswered questions, so many witnesses that just died, so many leads that weren't followed up on, so much evidence that obviously should have been collected that people have been prevented from collecting," said Johnson, an already widely known conspiracy theorist for things revolving around the COVID-19 pandemic and quackery that does not work and skepticism about the vaccine that does. It's just one of several conspiracy theories that he talked about in this YouTube show with a Tommy G, who the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article refers to as a YouTuber who bills himself as making the craziest documentaries on the video streaming website. They also talked about Robert Kennedy Jr.'s presidential campaign. Again, Robert Kennedy Jr. Is one who is spreading massive amounts of misinformation and outrageously now racist misinformation about the vaccine. So I'd looked at maybe playing some clips from this. I don't see that it's going to have a lot of value, frankly, except just to let you know it's there. And if you care to, shall we say, find yourself awash in conspiracy theories for 20 minutes or so, then you can look that up and hear Ron Johnson yourself. All right, let's talk about this song from Jason Aldean. That is the latest thing to divide folks when politics and entertainment come together to make a baby called controversy. And I would definitely try to comment on this as if I'm talking to some good friends and neighbors who aren't shy about calling themselves conservatives and proud Americans, but these same people, because I know them and love them, genuinely want to see eye to eye when they can have a disagreement with me or other people and subject it to some good, honest conversation. So here are the things I would say in that conversation, and I hope that it would help people understand a little deeper why there are people so troubled by the song and the video. So here we go. Jason Aldean is a very public conservative, and there's nothing wrong with having your beliefs. He put out a song not long ago called "Try That in a Small Town." Yeah, the lyrics are all right. They're a little thick, I'd say, on extolling the values of the small town. Because no one in their right mind thinks every small town is this utopian place with no crime and no bad people, and you know that there's a flag waving parade down Main Street every day. But if you want to talk up your community, whether it's a small town or a city, you go ahead and fly your flag. Okay, you go ahead and do that. But it's not just the lyrics; it's also the accompanying video that then magnifies those claims about small towns by pitting all small towns against all cities. And it truly serves as clickbait. And that's what this video is. And that's what the resulting controversy is, which is why I'm a little embarrassed to talk about it, but again, I feel like we're talking about it from the standpoint of pulling back the curtain. We're not just shaking our fist at it and saying that it's racist and it encourages lynching. And we're not just shaking our fist at the critics and saying, you're not Americans. We're spending some time breaking down the song and the video. And the video, the clickbait, is all about entertainment. And entertainment is all about ratings. Jason Aldean is not going to get attention for this song. He's not going to get clicks for the video. If it's just him standing at a microphone and singing on a stage or in a cornfield or on a small town main street. But add the imagery of riots and other violence and burn some American flags. Well, now you've got something that's going to go viral. It's going to go viral both ways, from people who love it and want to share it and people who go, what the hell is this? So I think we can all agree on point number one. This is entertainment. This is about clicks, chatter, ratings, and money, more so than it is about small town or American values. Jason Aldean and the director of this video did not choose those shots willy-nilly, okay? There was nothing accidental about how they put that video together. So now we get into the substance of the song, Life in a Small Town. Look, any town, any city can be awesome. Any town, any city can be a place you cannot wait to get out of. And you know what? They're usually both at the same time. So again, don't try to tell me the place that you like, the small town, is without its faults. You just chose not to include them in your song or in your video. Do you believe there's no domestic abuse in your small town? Children afraid of a parent because that parent believes in tough love at all costs? Are you familiar with meth or good old alcoholism? Do you think county jails in these small towns are empty, dusty places because nobody commits crimes in Mayberry? So, I mean, come on. Let's agree on point number two. The small town fairy tale is a fairy tale. Some are good. Some are really not good. Some are both at the same time. So if we agree on that, then what's this song really about? Well, it seems to me it's a way to work out some aggressions that Jason and other folks are feeling on the inside. Because there's lots of imagery there of people protesting, even rioting. And by the way, I guess a lot of the rioting video is not from the United States. It's from riots that took place in Canada. But again, if you're the director, it's entertainment, you know? But regardless, the imagery of people protesting and rioting, they're pointing out the people who keep seeing unarmed Black men and women getting gunned down with virtually no consequences. That's not something in Jason Aldean's experience. What Jason Aldean refuses to see is he's trying to make the point, you don't burn down your own community. Well, you don't burn down part of your community unless if you feel like it's actually your community. If you feel like somebody else is pulling all the strings, including whether you live or die when you're pulled over for a traffic violation, it doesn't feel like your community. But again, Jason Aldean is not upset about that first part. He's upset that the people who used to be scared, the people who are forced to fear others, are no longer simply frightened or intimidated. They're frustrated. They're mad, and they want you to know it. And instead of listening to their concerns, you write song lyrics about these frightened, frustrated, and now fed up people. You grab the imagery of the rioting rather than the imagery of their everyday lives, their struggles to overcome the suspicions and the sideways glances that you, Jason Aldean, will never have to live with. And the lyrics that follow are all tough guy that, oh, try that in a small town. But you know, there's a lot of people in a small town who are fed up with unfairness and injustice as well. And of course, there's the trope about rounding up all the guns. Oh, for the love of God, shut up about that already. Nobody wants your guns. So it's entertainment. It's about frustrations and refusing to understand why some people are so frustrated, fed up, fearful, and really want things to change. All right, when we come back, now we'll hear more from Joe Zepecki and a Protect Our Care event about trying to protect parts of the cancer screenings in the American Care Act. Back after this, you're up north. This Thursday morning, as we do each week, Joe Zepecki visits with us. You'd think, wait, why do we need to protect our care? Well, we're going to talk about a Texas judge in just a minute here. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Good. I might have jumped the gun here. Is U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor a Texas judge?
He is. Okay. And it wouldn't matter if he was in Texas or Oklahoma. He went way beyond his writ. A couple of companies asked for basically an exemption from having to abide by the preventative care requirements within the Affordable Care Act. And not only did this judge say, okay, to those two companies, you get the exemption, he tried to apply it to every company, every business in America, which is a wildly outside of the mainstream legal decision that now represents, once again, a very real threat to an essential component of the Affordable Care Act, which I will remind listeners has already surpassed constitutional challenge after constitutional challenge after constitutional challenge. They can't get the Supreme Court to throw this thing out. They can't get the Congress to vote to overturn this thing. They failed at that during the Trump administration. But boy, howdy. They're going to keep trying. And so they're coming for this once again.
Well, this judge has ruled against provisions of the Affordable Care Act before a George W. Bush appointee, I believe. So let's talk about this particular provision, this part of the Affordable Care Act that has already benefited many, many millions of Americans in the area of preventive services. What are we talking about there?
We're talking about cancer screenings most pointedly, right? We're talking about well visits. So when you're healthy, you should go to a doctor at least once a year. The Affordable Care Act provided for a free annual exam for everybody with health insurance in this country. This morning, our speaker from Planned Parenthood shared a first person experience that she had where a young Black woman came in to a Planned Parenthood clinic with a pretty serious medical condition. And as they were going through the course of treating her, realized that she had not had a healthy doctor's visit in her life. And unfortunately, this young woman had stage 4 cervical cancer. Early screening, preventative healthcare, wellness visits to doctors would have caught this and could have saved that woman's life. And that's the human impact of why we do this. So, you know, we got to protect this stuff. It matters. Anybody who's ever gotten a cancer diagnosis, the first question is, did we catch it in time? Right. And that's where the ability to see a doctor at low cost or no cost comes in.
Let me frame it this way, because I think it might make for an easier, quote unquote, political discussion. What I'm saying in framing it is the Affordable Care Act says to private insurance companies, listen, you're collecting money from these customers in the form of premiums. Hopefully you never have to pay out because there's never anything serious. But in return for these folks being your customer and paying premiums, you are at least going to foot the bill for some of these preventative cancer screenings and similar procedures. Is that a proper frame for this?
It is. And it makes good economic sense for the health insurance companies as well. Right? Because think about it. If I catch something early, it's easier to treat. If I catch something late when it's more expensive to treat, my healthcare premium in theory stays the same, right? And so it is actually in the insurance company's interests to abide by this, to figure out how to make no-cost preventative care work. And they have. We've been doing this for a dozen years, folks. And you know what? Not a single health insurance company has filed for bankruptcy or, you know, So like,
especially over cancer screenings,
right? It's just, it's ludicrous.
But to bring it back to the political, the reason I framed it that way is I can envision, you know, say your Republican neighbor or friend saying, well, you know, that's too far of actually requiring an insurance company to do something, but you've already laid out why they would want to do that anyway. Again, the whole ounce of prevention saves you a buck.
And these are the rules of the road. And we do this in industries all the time. Right? You want to manufacture cars in this country? You got to meet certain safety protocols. You want to make airplanes in this country? You got to meet certain safety standards. These are common sense, ordinary standards that have been in effect. They are working and we need to protect them.
Okay. So the Protect Our Care event yesterday morning in Madison featured, as you mentioned, somebody from Planned Parenthood. You also had somebody from, is it Vivint Health or Vivint?
Yes.
Vivint Health. As well as Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call. Now, what perspective did each of them bring to this? Why is this relevant to the Wisconsin Attorney General and a health executive?
The Attorney General has been a tremendous leader on this issue since he took office in 2019. He was responsible for removing Wisconsin from the last lawsuit that was challenging the constitutionality of the ACA. Josh Call did that as quickly as he could, and very recently, just within the last few weeks, filed an amicus curiae brief with the Supreme Court, arguing that this judge was in error. So he is using the legal authority that he has through his office to fight back against this. And he was able to share that perspective. Vivint and Planned Parenthood both provide healthcare services. They are providers often to low income, underserved communities, communities of color, the LGBTQ plus community. And so those speakers were talking about the value of these services and making sure that the communities and populations that they serve have access to this going forward, because they see it every single day.
All right, let's make the transition away from the healthcare story and into some of the other headlines of the week. And we'll stick with Attorney General Josh Call simply by connection to what his colleague in Michigan did earlier this week in filing felony charges against Michigan's fake electors. And you could hear in Attorney General Josh Call some time back, you know, I think it was very uncertain when it was all new. Is this a state thing? Should a local DA be prosecuting? Is this something for, well, now it'd be the special counsel of the U.S. Department of Justice? So I'm sensing the Attorney General here has been asked about what happened in Michigan.
He has, and I heard his answer, and I appreciated the candor. And, you know, before I get into the ins and outs of what he said, let's remember the perspective that he brings to this. Josh Call is a former federal prosecutor. This guy knows what it is to investigate and hold accountable people who have violated the law. And so what the Attorney General made very clear is that the State Department of Justice cannot confirm or deny whether or not there is an active investigation underway at this time. That is not how the justice system works. So the gears of justice may be turning and we wouldn't see it. The only exception to that, where the Attorney General might come out and talk about an active ongoing investigation, would be if there was an imminent threat to public safety. If we're talking about January 6th, we're talking about fake electors, that's not an imminent threat to public safety. So first and foremost, I thought it was appropriate for the Attorney General to make those points. And then secondly, you know, on, you know, he was asked about the difference. Well, if, you know, in Michigan, they've, you know, made, you know, public statements and now they're sort of following up on that. And, you know, he very respectfully and appropriately and politely pointed out, like, you know, that is the Michigan Attorney General and he respects her. It's a colleague. She's a friend. And he's got his perspective and he's doing it his way. And ultimately, I believe he's confident and what he wants to see is justice served. That is why he ran for office. That is why he is serving in office. And it is why he is a damn fine Attorney General.
It would seem to me when he at some point earlier somewhat deferred to the U.S. Department of Justice, I thought of it as, yeah, it would be one thing for a local law enforcement person to you know, catch the getaway driver of a bank robbery, but they may not be able to actually investigate or prove the robbery. But somebody on the other across the state line who's got the mastermind in their crosshairs could probably do the same thing. So if you've got a special counsel investigation, you've got a better chance of your net catching all the fish, not just a few. And to that end, the Wisconsin Elections Commission has also, you know, played into this. They've been asked to, you know, hear the case against the fake electors. And Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, acknowledged this week being interviewed in April by Justice Department and FBI officials as part of the special counsel's investigation, which included, you mentioned, you know, you're not going to tell somebody they're under investigation until you do. And that's what Jack Smith did this week, releasing that target letter that said, you know, we're not saying you're going to be charged, but there is some evidence out there. And maybe Mr. Trump, you'd like to come talk to our grand jury. Doesn't sound like the former president's going to cooperate. And I'm not sure that's great legal advice.
Yeah. And to be really clear, I mean, Jack Smith didn't tell anybody that Donald Trump is a target of the special counsel investigation into January 6th. Donald Trump did, right? The special counsel, Jack Smith, is not messing around. He is methodically going through, you know, and doing this by the book. And the book says when you reach the end of the investigation and, you know, you give an, a potential target the opportunity to come in and make their case before the grand jury. Donald Trump is saying he's not going to do that, right? And they give him time to do that. So it would suggest that the investigation into the January 6th part of his, you know, writ is wrapping up, and that in the next couple of weeks, Donald Trump may once again be indicted by the special counsel.
That would be
the third indictment for those scoring along at home.
Yeah, with you know, 2 to 4 more that seem to be lingering out there yet to come.
Right. Just to say nothing of Fulton County and Atlanta. And so I think going back to the our attorney general part of it and the overall takeaway, I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on the radio. You're not a lawyer.
No.
And the last few years, the Trump administration presidency and the Trump era has sort of made everybody armchair attorneys. We're not, right? What we know and what we see going on is just a fraction of what is ultimately going on. The wheels of justice are turning. We are seeing that in, you know, a couple indictments already, and certainly all of the tea leaves suggesting there will be more. We don't need more armchair quarterbacks, you know, making our judicial process seem even more political than it has already become just by virtue of perception. That's a problem. We need to avoid it.
Let's turn to one state political matter for a moment. And I don't know that much is new, but I think it's something we should continue to monitor. And that is, what, if anything, will the legislature do this fall with Governor Evers' vetoes, which essentially extended an invitation to say, hey, we could do more tax cuts, just not the kind that you Republicans wanted to do. And, you know, last I checked, the Republican leadership was still saying, well, we're not going to go along with that. And I just wanted to see if this week, how you felt, whether you're hearing anything that indicates there might actually be negotiations toward a new tax cut plan this fall, or are we just going to continue playing this game of chicken for a while?
I think we're going to play the game of chicken for a while. Let's provide the context. In his budget proposal, Tony Evers proposed a really nice tax cut for the middle class. That was part of the budget that Republicans said, we don't have time for this. We don't care about this. We don't want to talk about this. We're chucking the whole thing in the recycle bin. Hopefully they put it in the recycle bin instead of the trash can. And then in the wake of the governor's very strategic vetoes that really made Republicans mad, you had a bunch of sound and fury, right? Wow, how dare he? How could he? And I think people needed to let kind of the steam out of the kettle. And now the governor is back to saying what he has been saying all along. He wants a middle-class tax cut. We've got a surplus. Let's put it to work. Let's put it to work for the families who need it. What he's not going to abide is a massive, massive giveaway to the 11 richest Wisconsinites to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars for them and very little for the middle class. So I get the sense that the governor is still willing to deal. And I think the question is, have Republicans let all of their frustration about the governor's line item vetoes out of their system yet? My prediction would be that by September, this will have run its course and they will be back at the table and trying to figure out what they can get done.
There you go. All right. Right on time. Joe Sopecki, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you next week.
Up after the break, Dr. Lyerly will be here. We'll have today's history lesson. We'll do a little music break, and we're going to give away Brewers tickets. 4 tickets to Saturday evening's game at American Family Field. So long as you have not won a prize from Civic Media so far in the calendar month of July, you can have the tickets emailed. And if you were listening to Joe, you're going to be able to be the first caller to answer the news quiz. That's coming up in just a bit. Wherever you are, you're up north. I had to let Hugh Masekela's trumpet come in there, because otherwise it was all going to be about the cowbell. And this isn't the More Cowbell song. This is the trumpet song, Grazing in the Grass. It was the number one song this day in 1968. Kristen Lyerly joins us now from where I can't even keep track of you anymore. You've got this summer tour of like medical mission trips and part-time work and everything else. And so I'm going to guess you're in Hibbing.
I'm in Arizona, and I have this amazing vision right now of Pat Kreitler with a cowbell dancing around in a studio.
I have a cowbell. I guess I could do that.
Stay tuned, people.
Yeah, stay tuned. I kind of forgot that I haven't had to use a cowbell in a long time. I ran a half marathon 10 years ago, and some friends gathered on a street corner with their little cowbells to cheer me on. And I know, and I, you know, when, how often do you need a cowbell? But anyway, this is July 20th, which is, of course, the anniversary of the moon landing, Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong's giant leap for mankind this day in 1969. And really, the whole reason it was done was so that MTV could have their original logo when they would come on many, many years later. All right, this one's just for you, Dr. Lyerly. The number one song this day in 1963, the follow-up from It's My Party, a song where she had her heart broken by a gal named Judy. Here's the sequel. And I never thought that I would find in the year 2023 such a major, I mean, there's so many Swifties out there. Kristen Lyerly is like the Swiftie of Leslie Gore. You're a Leslie Gore stan, you know?
I even love her more now that I have found out that she sang all of these like super poppy songs about her boyfriend. Leslie Gore was married to a woman. Leslie Gore lived this like amazing subterranean life in the 60s because it wasn't okay for her to come out. So now I love her even more than I did.
Oh, sure. You know, you think about that with Rock Hudson. I'd seen the movie about the documentary about his life. And we've had other singers during this segment where, again, as you're looking back now in history at how they had to work so hard. Tab Hunter was another one. It was his birthday last week. And what it's such a different world now. Far from perfect. Don't get me wrong. We see the ugliness every single day. Mark Pocan's been fighting that battle in Congress just this week. But compared to full-time closeted, the way it was for generations, we're at least making some strides. Yeah. On this day in 1906, Finland guaranteed the first and equal right to vote in the world. Finnish women became the first in Europe to receive the right to vote this day in 1906.
Amazing.
The number one song this day in 1965 was from The Lovin' Spoonful. Look, if this song doesn't keep you in an upbeat mood, then I don't know that you have red blood cells in there. John Sebastian says he wrote it after seeing a beautiful girl dancing at one of their shows. We mentioned it earlier, but here's Evil Ways from Carlos Santana. As we tell you, he is 76 years old today, born in the Jalisco province of Mexico. Let's see, what did we play? We played Oye Como Va. Black Magic Woman is out there. I loved some of his things from the 80s, like Hold On,
Smooth with Rob Thomas, I think was from the 90s. The Game of Love with Michelle Branch in the 2000s. Just so many great compositions, either instrumental or with other lead singers. Such a talent.
So much of the undercurrent of his talent with other people and other collaborations that he's done. Just really a brilliant musician.
Yep. And one more birthday to tell you about. Born this day in 1945. Happy 78th birthday to Kim Carnes.
Oh, that's the Yacht Rock classic right there.
That right there. It's one of my favorites. Yep. I know everybody else would be playing Betty Davis Eyes. It's okay, but it kind of got overplayed in my book. So, whereas I like the little Yacht Rock ditty here that we've got going. do you mind if I give away some Brewers tickets here for just a second?
Oh, go for it.
Let me do this again. Cannot have won a prize yet in the month of July. The tickets have to be emailed to you, and you better use the tickets because these are great club level seats. It's a news quiz. If you were listening a few minutes ago, just be the first one in. Who wants four tickets and can use them for Saturday night's Brewers game against the Braves? Here we go. Why was the Michigan Attorney General in the news this week? First correct caller wins four tickets for Saturday night at 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. Why was the Michigan Attorney General in the news this week? Something that made national headlines, but really got a lot of attention here in Wisconsin with a lot of people going, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please be next. We'll see. So what did the Michigan Attorney General do? You tell that to Mr. Zommers when he picks up the phone. You're going to get tickets to a Brewers game come Saturday night. All right. So we established that you're back in. Oh, that's right. You're in Arizona because you put up some pictures. You were touring like a brewery or something yesterday.
I was touring everything yesterday. I'm in Northern Arizona near Flagstaff, and there are so many national monuments and national parks in this area. And at first I thought, well, it's just going to be the same thing over and over again, but it's not. There's so much beautifully preserved history that I spent the entire day outside just enjoying some of the beautiful things here in our country. So come on out to Arizona. Not right now. It's pretty hot.
My
Wait
favorite.
Until it's a little cooler.
My favorite.
But you had so much good thing to see.
Many pictures of pueblos, and one of them for sports. What did you call the sports one?
There was a ball court at one of these pueblos, and I called it their version, the pueblo version of Lambo.
You said the Lambo of the pueblo. I love that. You don't even remember being that clever, do you?
I did it like a full, I went down into it and I did like a full movie of the, I did a 360 of it. It was kind of cool.
Nice. Is this former president James Madison on the line or is this James from Matt? I'm going to go with James from Madison. James, good morning.
Yes.
Oh, good morning. We're going to get a little feedback there. So James, I'll ask you real quick. What did the Michigan Attorney General do this week?
He arrested the people for voter fraud.
Pretty close. I'm going to give you enough credit because the voter fraud was committed by the fake electors who got the criminal charges filed. And she, the Michigan Attorney General, did that. James, you stand by with Aaron, and we'll get the info to get those tickets to you. Thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate it very much. Kristen, I know you like me, were putting up a post about that going, maybe Wisconsin next, huh? Fingers crossed.
Yeah, man, I was really, really envious of what was happening in Michigan.
Well, that's because one of our fake electors in Wisconsin is still a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission.
Yeah.
After we are coming up on 1,000 days since the 2020 election, and we're still seeking justice for the voter fraud that was actually committed by people that day. All right, Kristen's going to hang around. Also in the next hour, Selena Heller and Hometown Health. All that and more coming up ahead. You're on Up North News Radio.